Jim, do you want to take on the next issue?
Sure. The next issue is paper 36. It's the dealing with scope and its applicability of the new standard to applicability or not to certain credit card arrangements. And I'll turn it over to Mary to discuss.
Thanks, Jim. The questions discussed in memo number 36 relate to the interaction of topic 606 with other U.S. GAAPs, specifically topic 310, receivables. As such, the questions in the paper are applicable only under U.S. GAAP. The standard includes a scope exception for financial instruments in the scope of topic 310. However, the scope of the standard also describes that a contract with a customer may be partially in the scope of the revenue standard and the scope of other topics. This has led some stakeholders to question whether the rights and obligations of a card-issuing bank's contract with a cardholder, including rewards programs, are in the scope of the new revenue standard. In order to address these questions, an entity must first assess whether or not credit card fees are included in the scope of Topic 310. The staff notes that the fees are included in the scope of Topic 310 today and that no consequential amendments were made to Topic 310 upon issuance of the revenue standard. If an entity concludes that the fees are in the scope of Topic 310, then the rewards program related to those fees would not be in the topic, would not be in the scope of Topic 606. So with that, we'll turn it over to TRG members for discussion.
Jim.
Thanks, Jim. As we discussed this among the staff, I think we're generally in agreement with where practice is today. That doesn't mean to say that there couldn't be abuse situations where the other goods or services that are offered by the financial institution may need to be counted for separately. So I don't think, you know, I just want to kind of lay down the marker that just because current practice is what it is today, and that's based on goods and services that are provided by the financial institution, that that means that's forever going to be, you know, acceptable.
We tried to illustrate that. It was one that was so obvious that, you know, and it, you don't see it today, as if you had a fee that covered the sale of a automobile. I assume your abuse doesn't have to go that far, probably, before you're uncomfortable with it, I guess. But Scott?
In all the situations that I've looked at this before, the in general, the answer to the period of revenue recognition or income recognition wouldn't change all that much based on what you thought was going on. But conceptually, I do see a lot of credit cards that seem to include things that I wouldn't have put in 310. You get a credit card that gives you a free bag check and two club passes on an airline in exchange for your annual fee. I wouldn't have thought that the free bag check and the club passes were in 310. Now, I also wouldn't have thought that it would make a big difference in when income would be recognized either, so I wouldn't get too hung up on it. But I was concerned with the way the paper read. The staff seemed to accept, well, everybody uses 310 today, and we didn't change 310, so must be okay. You know, like Jim, I am concerned about abuses, but I'm also a little bit concerned about the principle here. You know, if you attach it to a credit card, then it's easier to call it part of 310 than if you don't. So I was a little uncomfortable with the way the paper was written up, although I'm not sure that I care too much in terms of what the accounting turns out to be.
How do people account for those today, 310?
Honestly, I don't know if they care too much whether it's 310. Maybe we could have a financial industry representative. But, I mean, it's all going to be over a year anyways, so give and take, credit cards are issued throughout the year, passes are used roughly equally throughout the year, and the financial institution isn't the one redeeming the passes anyways. So, you know, I don't think anybody gets too hung up on it.
Yes, yeah, Scott, and our outreach is to clarify. We did ask that question in terms of what's done today, and today everything's in the scope of 310. There's not anything that's bifurcated into 605.
And that was probably to 20 very large banks, so a significant percent of the population. Russ?
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think the purpose of the paper was to say and draw a line between 310 and 606. I think the purpose of the paper was to say the board did not change the scope of 310, and therefore, if the judgment in good faith and appropriate today concluded you're in 310, we don't know why that wouldn't be the case after this standard is issued, which I think is similar to Jim Schnur's comments. Which means that you don't get a free pass from here on out that if you put anything associated with a credit card fee, you're in 310. It means you have to use judgment, but that judgment seems to have worked in the past, and we don't see any reason why it wouldn't work in the future.
Brian?
I guess I'd just like to say that this accounting paper is as close to a Shakespeare sonnet as an accounting paper can be.
Is that good or bad?
I'm not really sure how to follow that up, to be perfectly honest with you. All I was going to point out, two things, actually. The first is, as I read this paper, in thinking about some questions that have started to arise with other industries in terms of when are you in the scope of the new revenue standard and when are you not, and those questions arising because today there may be mixed practice with respect to certain types of arrangements as to whether some or all of those contracts are in the scope of current revenue guidance. So that's why the questions are coming up under the new revenue guidance. And in what I've taken away from this paper, in hoping that that's the correct interpretation, is that for credit card fees, there is specific guidance in U.S. GAAP that exists that covers that accounting today. And so because, as Russ indicated, the board did not change the scope of 310, that influences how you think about, on a go-forward basis, what would be in the scope of the new revenue standard and what would not be. So for other industries, as they're trying to evaluate these questions around scoping, a similar consideration might be applicable, meaning is there existing guidance today that they are following that's explicit, that has not been changed by the new revenue standard, and what that might end up influencing the accounting, or the absence of specific guidance governing a certain transaction might then suggest, if there isn't something specifically scoping you out, that therefore you are in the scope of the revenue standard. So that was my first observation, just to clarify and make sure that that interpretation is correct. And then secondly, I'll be certainly interested to hear if there are any comments over in London, appreciating that the question came up in the context of current U.S. GAAP. But the appendix on the IFRS considerations, I think, was very interesting. And in some of our dialogue within our firm, we were trying to think about whether we would end up with a converged answer on a go-forward basis. And maybe the answer is no, because there is specific legacy U.S. GAAP guidance that's going to continue to apply to these credit card fees, whereas the application of IFRS might end up with a different answer. But it was just an interesting dialogue we had within our own firm, thinking, okay, well, we think in some instances we could have different accounting for credit card fees going forward.
Yeah, Allison, on your first observation, I think the way you described it is fair. What we tried to do in the paper, rather than just answering this question, is lay out the framework of how the scope paragraphs work in the interaction with other topics, because what we've observed with this question and with others is paragraph 15.4 talks about whether things are partially in the scope of this standard and the other in separation, and we have observed some people are jumping right to what I have to separate without answering the question of whether or not they're in the scope of a different topic. So we were hoping that this would be educational in terms of the thought process of how you think about whether something is in the scope of other U.S. GAAP and how you progress through that scope paragraph.
The only thing I would add to what Mary said is I'm a little hesitant to say that in all cases where there is an absence of U.S. GAAP that you automatically go to topic 606. For example, Mary and I are working through an issue with the insurance industry where it appears that there is a type of transaction for which there is an absence of explicit U.S. GAAP. I don't know how they would apply topic 606. So I don't think we can sit here today and say anytime there's an absence of 606, absence of U.S. GAAP, one automatically defaults to 606. I think if there are cases like that, you think it could be important, probably the best avenue is to reach out to us and have a discussion with us on that.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Mary, I don't disagree with anything that was said here, and we had some discussions around question two and what. Can you just elaborate a bit on what is like paragraph 20? What is that? This whole section trying to say is it? Some of us took it to mean these are out of the scope, so therefore any of the costs or payments that you make would be out of the scope too, and therefore they wouldn't be a reduction of revenue. Is that sort of the direction this is going? Or
so I think it's hard to give an answer to question two, because the board observed during its deliberations and it's discussed on the basis that these are very facts and circumstances specific. The arrangements vary. I think what we're trying to get across with paragraph 21 is if you conclude that the fees in 310, then the loyalty programs are out of the scope. We don't know all of the arrangements that are out there, the landscape of them. So if you were to conclude that something was not in the scope of 310, then this is an analysis. This is how you might think about it under 606, just because we can't definitively say every single arrangement. You know, the points made earlier in terms of, you know, anti-abuse and whatnot, that everything would automatically be out of scope.
But if they're out of the scope, then the loyalty points program, those are costs.
That's not
reductions of revenue.
That's right. If the fees in 310, then the loyalty program would not be revenue under 606.
Others here? Ian, over to you for any discussion.
Thank you, Jim. Anybody like to comment, and particularly rather than on US GAAP, on Appendix C and IFRS? James.
Thanks, Jim. I mean, maybe to follow up from what Alison was saying, we found the guidance in Appendix C relevant to IFRS reporters. I think the same question is happening in the IFRS world when it comes to credit cards. By and large, we found the paper, although written from a US GAAP angle, very useful, especially paragraphs 20 and 21, in giving the thought pattern one should be following when it comes to looking at credit card fees. And I think there's quite a lot of judgment that's going to be required maybe in the IFRS world, because the nature of these contracts does differ from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So where we thought the paper was helpful was it gave a thought pattern. I suppose we were somewhat concerned that would we be getting different answers if somebody was applying topic 606 or US GAAP versus IFRS, would we expect those different topics? However, further than that, we didn't believe there was any further changes required.
Yeah, just to clarify, that difference potentially arises because
301.
It's that interaction. Effectively, it is narrow, my understanding, of effectively what is potentially out of the revenue standard and then the financial instrument standard with respect to these fees under IFRS compared to US GAAP.
I agree with what you're saying, Henry. And we're looking at 9 versus IFRS 15, and we think there might be some subtle differences between the two.
Okay. Philip. Yes, I've not looked at all closely to this, so I'm very happy for people to tell me I'm wrong. But my impression is that the IFRS analysis might be a little different. And the main reason I say that is I think what I'm hearing is that the US analysis says if something is a credit card fee, then kind of regardless what you get for it, you'll account for it following the guidance on credit card fees. My initial impression of the IFRS guidance is that you have to decide what something is and what you're getting as a result of it before you start looking at which guidance to apply to it. So in particular, looking at the stuff in Appendix C, the quote from B5.4.1 in IFRS 9 kind of gives you the impression that you have to look at what the substance is of the amounts that are being paid and presumably what the customer is getting. So that gives me the initial impression that things might well be segregated out and fall within the scope of IFRS 15. But that's just an initial impression. Others may have thought about this more carefully.
I think it was certainly my understanding that really for the fee to be in IFRS 9, you'd have to determine if it's part of the effective interest rate on the financial instrument. Otherwise, it will be in the revenue standard. And actually, there's really no change to how that intersection, if you like, between the financial instrument standard and the revenue standard. There's really no change because of IFRS 15 or IFRS 9. It's just that sort of the geography has changed.
I think that's true. But of course, the main change is that previously everything was covered by IAS 18,
yes,
which was very thin on questions like unbundling and allocation of revenue.
But those fees were probably, yes, you're right, they were in the revenue standard. but the revenue standard hadn't said they were really part of the financial instruments.
Two aspects, one following up on Phil's comment and one maybe a question for those back in Norwalk. Comment following up on Phil's point is I think the significance in the U.S. GAAP analysis of if you've determined it's a credit card fee, there's an explicit prohibition on separating what the fee might cover, and the requirement is to say it's all treated as credit card fee, subject as Jim and Jim pointed out in Norwalk at the beginning, to questions about abusive situations where something is just being attached for convenience or structuring purposes to a credit card. Well, I think part of it is in IFRS, at least if you look at what is in Appendix C, there isn't that kind of prohibition, which kind of leads me to my question back to the folks in Norwalk, which is a couple of people speaking at the beginning said, since credit card fees, let's assume they're an annual payment, it's all going to be resolved within the year anyway, so how concerned do you get about this? But if you think about accumulating loyalty point programs, that if you look at it from an IFRS perspective, that's something that may be a performance obligation that hasn't been satisfied at the end of the 1 year for the credit card payment, and I guess that's where I see some tension is, and where I would expect maybe some IFRS US GAAP differences is that under IFRS assuming it was material, you would have a separate performance obligation that wasn't resolved within that 1 year period. Well, my understanding from just this paper and nothing more, I'm no expert in this area, is that you would have cleared it all out at the end of the year because that's the end of the program with maybe some kind of cost accrual but not an allocation of revenue. And given all the discussions that we had, though, these many years ago in IFRS land about the IFRIC interpretation about loyalty card programs, I think the sense was that could be a meaningful difference for some entities.
Okay. Any other comments at this end? Jim, I don't know if you want to respond to Mary's point.
I think Mary's right. There could be some differences. I'm not sure that you would end up there saying you hadn't earned the revenue if you decided that revenue generating activity was delivering a point. I think some might say when you delivered the point that you've earned the revenue and you have a cost accrual. I don't know how people would handle that in practice. I don't think that's what's done here. And you do have an obligation, I think, in either case if you haven't redeemed the point. So I'm not sure how fundamentally different the financials would look. I don't know if others see that differently in terms of Mary's point. Scott?
Just to add to that in terms of the loyalty program issue, typically if you don't pay the next year's annual fee, you lose all your points. So I think there's kind of a question as to what the performance period is. You're not really locked in to redeeming those points in the future unless there is another annual fee. So if they're not cleared up by the end, I'm not sure which period you attribute that redemption feature to. But since these plans vary so much in terms of whether the credit card issuer is the one doing all the redemption, or instead if the points are used at merchants or partners, it's always been a little unclear to me as to whether that is a revenue issue or a cost issue. So I don't think that I've really thought about it all that much further. But they need to pay the next year's annual fee to keep the points alive, I think further clouds the picture.
Ian, anything else in London?
No, nothing more here, Jim.
So I think on this one, to summarize, the staff lays out, and I think people understand that it was not the intent of the board to change the scope of 310 today. That notwithstanding, just because something is labeled a credit card fee, I think Jim's warning at the outset is good advice. You could put something inside a credit card fee that is so clearly unrelated that you would still need to go through the thought process in the paper, that is identifying the separate performance obligations. But I think people understood, at least with respect to the types of transactions and what we're seeing in credit cards today, our survey of practice was that those are accounted for under 310, so that the points and that type of activity. I think general agreement on that, and also a general agreement that that could cause a U.S. GAAP IFRS difference with respect to the scope as outlined in Appendix C.